Hey, friends, before we get started here at Dog and Pony Show Audio, we've got a great new season of our program, World's Greatest Con. It is the thing that I've put the most effort into over the last 6 months behind the scenes. We try not to talk about it till it's ready. Well, guess what? It's ready. First two episodes are available now. If you've never listened to the show, it is hosted by Brian Brushwood, my co-creator on that program, wherein we explain that cons don't fool us because we're stupid. They fool us because we're human. And the story we have for you this season is remarkable. For the first time ever, we've gone out and done original reporting. Here is a 40-second trailer for it.
It's 1981. Two boys are sitting at a table in St. Louis because these boys are psychic. They can bend metal, stop clocks, all with their minds. And they do it under supervision by some of the smartest people on the planet. But of course, we know cons don't fool us because we're stupid.
They thought they were too smart to be fooled.
We did truly break the law.
He has a complete mental breakdown. You see these people as the enemy.
This season on World's Greatest Con, everyone will finally know the truth of Project Alpha.
We've gotten amazing feedback on this season thus far. Teller of Penn and Teller, Dan Carlin, and many others have been very, very nice about their praise for it. Why don't you find out what they have found super impressive? Head on over to the podcatcher of your choice. Download the first two episodes of our third season of World's Greatest Con, telling the full story of Project Alpha. Go ahead now. Till then, here's the show.
This is made possible by Dustin Campbell, Owe Them Bones, Daily Tech News Show, Andy Beach, Nick Wood, and Craig.
Oh, my Lord. What happened? I just kind of feel like the last few weeks. Oh, my God. It's just one thing after another. And, you know, you have all the Trump Manhattan DA hokey pokey, he's going to get indicted, not going to get indicted, gets indicted, goes to New York, gets arrested. So much. You know, whenever you have the adrenaline of news stories like that, it's very, very easy for you to lose sight of the larger picture. In fact, that's really the basis of all crisis management. When somebody gets into trouble, what you want to do is give the audience reason less to make your problem interesting. And if you're really thinking three-dimensionally, give them lots of reasons to care about other things. I'm not here to do a conspiracy theory kind of thing, but this is, in general, how stuff like that moves forward. The only thing that you don't want is for somebody to keep their eye on the ball. And so, today, on this show, that's exactly what we are going to do. We're going to reset where we are politically, where we are electorally, and where we are in our gigantic roadmap between now and 2024. It's a refresh. No. More like a reset. Yeah. Maybe more than a reset. Maybe it's the Great Reset. It's pretty catchy. I should trademark it. My name is Justin Robert Young. For Dog and Pony Show Audio, this is Politics, Politics, Politics. Baby.
Fantastic event, one of my favorites of the year. I was just wondering, Mr. President, will you be taking part in the Easter egg rolls after 2024?
Well, I plan on at least three or four more Easter egg rolls.
At least three or four more?
Maybe five.
Maybe five.
maybe so, six. So what the hell?
Are you saying that you would be taking part in our upcoming election in 2024?
Well, I'll either be rolling an egg or, you know, being the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a brother out. Make some news for me.
I plan on running now, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
All right. Well, so nice. Thank you for having us.
That is the president of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., during the White House's Easter egg roll this week, in very Biden-esque terms, stammering his way through what I'm sure would have been a joke 20 years ago, and now is just an awkward moment on television with Al Roker, confirming that nothing has changed. He has said for years that he plans to run, and so he plans to run, but there is no announcement as of yet. You know, I finally got around to reading the book Lucky by Amy Parnes and Jonathan Allen over the last few weeks. And it's great. Now, it's not quite as great as their last book, which I really loved. That was called Shattered, and that was about the 2016 campaign. This is no shade to Lucky, because I'm going to explain why I don't think they really had much of a chance. First, Shattered is just a better story. It's the final immolation of capital T, capital S, capital T, the sure thing, Hillary Clinton. It's the rise of Trump, the humiliation of people who are paid to know better. It had amazing color, like Bill Clinton behind the scenes, roaming around in the background of meetings, asking anybody like, hey, are you guys worried about Brexit? I just kind of, you know, I'm watching what was happening with Brexit. Seems like that's really worrisome. Maybe we should think about. Meanwhile, a bunch of 20 somethings buried in their spreadsheets just loudly sigh and wonder when the old man is going to bed. Meanwhile, Lucky is hamstrung by a few things. The chaotic Trump campaign had a tightening, and that stemmed some of the leaks that usually make these books worth reading. And let me be 100% clear here. Campaign postmortem books, of which I love, they might be my favorite genre of book ever, are The Car. Unnamed consultants who worked together, shredding each other for their mistakes and taking credit for victories, is the gas that moves the car. And the best of these books go pedal to the metal. But everything reporting-wise got hampered by the lockdown. Without a campaign trail where the only people that you know in these strange towns are often the campaign and the press, this kind of gossip is a little harder to wring out. You know, it's one thing if somebody just got out of some frustrating meeting or is in the middle of a lot of stress and you happen to be at the only dive bar in Iowa, the Iowa town that you are all happen to be in, you know, then a friendly face is somebody that you might want to talk to. If everybody's in their house, I'm sure these guys who wrote the book, I'm sure they were texting as much as they would or could, but it's just harder to get stuff out of people, especially when it's all in a recorded medium, which even in a voice over IP situation like Zoom or Skype, you can never really be sure that you're not being recorded. If you're in the dive bar, you know, you can have a little bit of confidence. Let me give you a sense of how much of a small office vibe comes along with being on the campaign trail. I ran into one of these authors at the cigar place in Caesar's Palace during the Nevada caucus. All right, book report over. Here's what I gleaned from reading that book about Biden World. And by far, the most sources that come from this book were all embedded within Biden World. Left to their own devices, they will take forever. Joe Biden takes forever to make decisions. He likes to bounce it off a million different people. He changes his mind. He wants to go back. He wants to circle through another line of thinking. He trusts things. He doesn't trust things. It takes a while. It takes a while. So since they have no rush to announce the presidential run, I don't think that they will anytime soon. I mean, if you look at when announcements have been made, you know, the latest most successful campaign that was announced, and this wasn't a re-election campaign. Re-election campaigns, I think, you know, tend to be a little bit more perfunctory. But John McCain announced in 2008 that he was running in like September. It was fairly late in the process. It's not like insanely late like Michael Bloomberg in November, but still, Joe Biden isn't going to have any debates that he has to worry about. He's just announcing it to announce. But also, the second he announced, the question is going to be, when and how are you going to be on the road? Now, for a sitting president, that's a little bit different. You can do a little bit of a Rose Garden campaign. You can use the trappings of the presidency to make your case to America without necessarily having to slurp down greasy hot dogs and high-five every baby and kiss every dog. You are allowed to just be the prez. Still, there will be a lot of conversation, including on this program, about how much Joe Biden will leave. Hi to Biden was a topic on this podcast quite a bit. And as I found out in that Lucky book, it was certainly a very, very, very interesting conversation within the Biden campaign back in 2020. But still, I would not be shocked if we don't see Biden announce until after September, or at least at September. Realistically, it would be smart to delay any announcement until after this whole debt ceiling situation clears up. So, if we are still leaving the Biden reelection campaign in the freezer for now, let's go across the aisle.
Which, as of this date, is a radical left troublemaking organization that red flags the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights as dangerous and triggering. Can you imagine?
Wait. After the last 2 weeks, there's no reason to talk about Trump. 2, 3, 4. All right. We're doing the great reset. Let's reset. We have one high-profile announced candidate who's barely polling out of the 1%. Very, very Connor Roy numbers here for one of the high-profile announced candidates. And then we have a higher-profile unannounced candidate. Both of them seem to understand that the indictment of Trump means that they either need to figure out a way to differentiate themselves from Trump, or this is big, messy, and over. So let's start with the one percenter. Nikki Haley. Her campaign is circulating a memo which takes clearer aim at Trump than she has up till now. Remember, she's mostly trained her fire on DeSantis until this position. This is from Axios. Haley's 2024 campaign is telling donors that former President Trump is consumed by the grievances of the past and the promise of more drama in the future. Haley, next to Trump, has the biggest profile of everybody who's announced. And that means that she has raised more than nearly all of the 2016 GOP candidates in their first quarter. And more than Trump in the first quarter of this cycle, although Trump's campaign hasn't released its full numbers. We need to have Dave Leventhal back on because this has been a particularly egregious pushing back of deadlines from the Trump team. Says Haley's campaign manager, Betsy Anke. Donald Trump had a pretty good Q1, if you count being indicted as good. It's increasingly clear that Trump's candidacy is more consumed by the grievances of the past, the promises of more drama in the future, rather than forward-looking vision of the people. They then go on to say to all the donors, and Ron DeSantis is not ready for prime time either. As for the others, says the memo, wait, there are others? The big push for Nikki Haley, at least to the donors. They want a bunch of money just in case Ron DeSantis flashes out, which there were some rumors, some bubbling under the crust rumors that maybe DeSantis does blink and doesn't get in faced with the indictment. We have more DeSantis stuff later, but Haley's campaign says that they are leading on policy. One might say she has a plan for that. Big structural Haley. Big structural Haley. Quote, we put forward concrete policy plans on foreign aid, immigration, spending restraint, entitlement reform, and yes, mental competency tests for politicians over the age of 75. And good for you, Nikki Haley. At least you're out here. You're out here doing stuff. She's down at the border. She's in Iowa. She's making this happen. Ron DeSantis is keeping his powder dry. Now, this has always been the plan. This has always been the plan, but the Tennessee crew has had some weird weeks lately. Ooh-wee! It has not been ideal. Donald Trump will not allow the DeSantis 24 campaign to keep their soft launch soft. No, he keeps agitating and riling it. Walt Disney came back from the grave and struck back against Ron DeSantis, which led, of course, DeSantis to strike back. I'm going to add here, this is not really a problem. This is, to be totally honest, something that I think he needs and enjoys. It shows a vitality and vibrancy that will always elevate him because it's something that Trump has not done. They want to paint Donald Trump as all talk, no action. They want to paint him as somebody that makes a lot of promises and very rarely delivers. The fact that DeSantis is actively going blow for blow with Disney is something that is good for him for primary voters, specifically those of the MAGA stripe. But through all that, we have a legislative session in Florida that is ongoing. And remember, the point of Ron DeSantis announcing after all this is so he can have a blood red record of actual achievements to brag about on the trail. Two of them have surfaced over the last week. Via CNN, we have the abortion law. Florida State Senate on Monday passed a bill that would ban most abortions in the state after the gestational age of 6 weeks, or about 4 weeks of pregnancy. The bill's advance, which still needs to pass the state-led GOP House, comes 1 year after Governor Ron DeSantis signed a 15-week ban into law. The new legislation likely further burnishes the conservative credentials of DeSantis, a potential 2024 presidential candidate, and was met with outrage by state Democrats, two of whom were arrested during a protest near the state capitol on Monday. The current bill would impose restrictions on telehealth abortions and medication. It would also include exemptions for women facing life-threatening harm while pregnant, victims of rape, incest, and human trafficking. So, 6 weeks is short. 15 weeks felt like more of something that I think Ron DeSantis could go out to the country and say, 15 weeks is closer to the average of what happens in Europe. It is closer to what, when you poll Americans, they say that the line between the quote unquote cluster of cells and a human life exists at. That is not something that will get you an A plus from the National Right to Life effort. 6 weeks is a lot closer to that. I'm gonna get to that in a second, but let's do the other big law that seemed to be passing through the Florida House. It's on illegal immigration. The bills that are currently passing through the Florida legislature would expose people to felony charges for sheltering, hiring, and transporting undocumented immigrants. Require hospitals to ask patients their immigration status and report to the state, invalidate out-of-state driver's license issued to undocumented immigrants, prevent undocumented immigrants from being admitted to the bar in Florida, and direct the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to provide assistance to federal authorities in enforcing the nation's immigration laws. Mr. DeSantis has separately proposed eliminating in-state college tuition for undocumented students and beneficiaries of the Obama-era DREAM Act, or DACA. The tuition law was enacted by his predecessor, Rick Scott, who is now a Republican senator. That was from the New York Times. Now, either of these two are law as of now, but keep an eye on how these things change if they do before Ron DeSantis signs them and how he touts them. Some of these legislative victories he wants for the website. He wants so we can bring it up at various different places where the communities are going to be receptive to it. Others he wants to make a big deal about. And he'll have a big, gigantic signing ceremony that'll have a bunch of props in the background. He'll make sure that he stage dresses this. If there's anything that we should have learned from Kimberly Leonard as she's been on this show talking about Ron DeSantis is that he is a choreographed man. Now, the kind of archetype that Trump destroyed in 2016 was a very risk-averse politician, Jeb Bush. Ted Cruz, everybody else on the stage. Ron DeSantis is not Trump in that he is not shoot from the hip. Nobody is quite as fast as Donald Trump when it comes to just being a bull in a china shop. But he's much more P.T. Barnum than Jeb Bush is. So yes, he wants the message to be exactly what he wants to get out there, but he is going to make sure that there's a wild waving inflatable man like a used car dealership out front when he says it, because he wants people to pay attention to it. So when it comes to these specific issues, I think the best thing I can tell you, the listener, is make sure you pay attention to what they are when they pass, how they changed, and how he announces it. Now, the abortion measure, in my opinion, this is just my opinion as somebody who has spent a lot of time in Florida. I believe that 6 weeks is to the right of the average Floridian. Yes, there are a lot of blood red folks in Florida. Yes, Ron DeSantis is very popular there. 15 felt more like Florida. 6 feels a little more like Alabama. I do not know if Ron DeSantis would do this if he did not want to run for president and did not want to go to Iowa to talk to evangelicals to get their support. I think he also wants to make sure that he is cutting off Mike Pence. He is cutting off anybody else that is running on the evangelical side. Going more aggressive into the right of Trump on abortion boxes Trump in. Trump has not been shy about saying that the abortion issue is driving suburban independents away from the GOP post-Dobbs. But Trump also needs those evangelicals. They were a key part of his win in 2016. And also, when it comes to the problem of suburban independents and Republican-leaning voters not voting for the GOP, the only song that Donald Trump needs to be singing is it's me, I'm the problem, it's me. Because just as much as abortion is old school Republican problems, right? That is tale as old as time, song as old as rhyme, red meat for Democrats to beat Republicans with. Now, the Republicans need to get their act straight on exactly what the message is, but Donald Trump is a huge, huge factor here. The good news for Trump is that there were a few Florida politicians that would have otherwise been kind of borderline cases with Trump and DeSantis that went Trump's way over the weekend. The biggest name, Representative Byron Donalds, the Florida congressman who is close to DeSantis, but became a national figure amidst the brouhaha over the speakership fight in the House. So that's where we are when it comes to the presidency. But we still got the Senate to go, and I got two states that I have my eye on. The Keystone State of Pennsylvania and all West Virginia. Mountain Mama, we'll be right back after this. Your update is brought to you by TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Again, that is TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Head to that website if you would like to get an ad-free feed, only a dollar a week. Folks, it is an inflation-busting deal, $1 a week. Here's another even better deal. $3 a week, you get two bonus podcasts each and every week. Guys, it doesn't matter when I'm on the road, whether I'm launching World's Greatest Con, which is taking up all my other time, I'm still doing two bonus podcasts for you guys on top of the two that I do here. And you get them for only the modest price of $3. You know the things you spend $3 on? If you live in one of these big cities, oh boy, you're driving a car, you're spending $6 just to cross a bridge. Been a while since I've crossed a bridge in a big city. But I assume it was anywhere between $6 and $50 each time you do it. Head on over there, TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Let's go ahead and get to your updates. The Gang of Eight in the Senate has succeeded in getting the presidential documents that have been seized from Donald Trump, Joe Biden, and Michael Pence's house. The Biden administration finally relenting to give them access to those classified documents, according to sources familiar with the matter. This is a major victory for Congress and more broadly a validation of the lawmakers' role as overseers of the U.S. intelligence community, reports Punchbowl News. This is the direct result of a pressure campaign from the Senate Intelligence Committee's chair and vice chair, Senators Mark Warner and Marco Rubio, who relentlessly hammered the Biden administration over its months-long refusal to share the documents with the committee. The Biden administration began producing the documents last week, we're told. The Gang of Eight includes Warner and Rubio, their House Intelligence Committee counterparts, and the Democratic and Republican leader in each chamber. The members of this group and some designated staffers have access to the most sensitive intelligence material. The Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Robert Califf says that misinformation about health matters has contributed to lower life expectancy in the United States. In an interview with CNBC published Tuesday, Califf said that the U.S. has a lower average life expectancy than other high-income countries, partly because of the rise of misinformation spurred on by the coronavirus pandemic and increased political tensions. He said that the spread of misinformation, quote-unquote, bothers him a lot, noting that the U.S. is essentially in last place compared to similar first world nations. I am not here to cast aspersions on the Food and Drug Administration commissioner. However, it seems like anywhere between alarmist to misinformed to dystopian. You be the judge here. Misinformation. God, do I hate that word, misinformation. Misinformation. Not disinformation. Disinformation is deliberate lies. Lies from a foreign country, lies from various different parts of our government, lies from different political parties, lies from your ex-girlfriend or boyfriend. Lies. Disinformation. Actively trying to sow the seeds of confusion. Misinformation is a very, very, very big word. Misinformation could be mistaken. Misinformation could be a portion of truth that is then mixed with a bunch of other stuff. It could be the actual facts presented in a way that might obscure the point that somebody else wants you to reach from it. All this being said, I would very much not like our FDA commissioner talking about misinformation. Now, if you want to promote ways that people can get more accurate information. Let's say, here's a crazy idea. What if we increased trust between the populace and the government that has been looking to them for facts? Because here's something that happened during the coronavirus pandemic. A staggering lack of trust in the government. I don't know. Maybe I would like to see that a little bit more. The Tennessee tube boomeranging back to the state house. Representative Justin Jones, Democrat Nashville, and Justin Pearson, Democrat Memphis, were expelled by the Republican-led Tennessee House last week. Of course, this used to be the Tennessee Three, but Representative Gloria Johnson, Democrat Knoxville, was about to be expelled as well, except she got one Republican to agree with her. So, she was not. Of course, this led to claims of racism. Republicans in that chamber argued that the Tennessee Three had violated House rules and engaged in disorderly behavior by participating in a protest for stricter gun laws in the well of the chamber. The demonstration took place in the wake of the Nashville school shootings that left 6 people dead, including 3 children. So what happens now? Well, Jones and Pearson's expulsions have triggered special elections to select permanent replacements, but a date for those elections have yet to be set. The expelled lawmakers are eligible to run in those special elections and, if successful, cannot be expelled again for the same reason. So they would need another reason to expel them if they were indeed going to be so dumb and petty. For now, local authorities in each district choose who will represent them in the state house temporarily. And this week, Nashville's Metro Council had a special meeting on Monday to select an interim replacement and voted unanimously to return Justin Jones to the seat that he was expelled from. Quote Jones, "I want to welcome the people back to the people's house. I want to welcome democracy back to the people's house." Meanwhile, Shelby County commissioners will meet on Wednesday, when you're listening to this, to consider reappointing Pearson to his seat in the interim. We have said this before. We will say it again. We don't know the local politics on this. All I know is that at this point, it's just going to be embarrassing for the Republicans in that chamber to watch them swing the biggest stick that they could to hit these three. It only work on 2 of them, and then it gets so much national attention that they just bounce right back. You know, this is the reason why, and I know, Justin, you want everybody to get along. You're so lame. The reason why I wanted national politicians to step in and help mediate this so it doesn't just turn into a big sloppy who is the one who's controlling who. It's so petty and so stupid. It should have been resolved with a apology, and instead we get more of this. TakePoliticsSeriously.com is where you need to go if you want to get a bonus podcast on Thursday. You'll want to get a bonus podcast on Monday. Folks, it's just that simple. Head on over there right now. Take Politics Seriously. $3 is all it takes. And now, back to the show.
Scandal after scandal. And Bob Casey keeps getting caught red-handed. Caught shelling out $500,000 in campaign cash to his sister's company. Caught peddling influence with his brother. And caught breaking Congress's insider trading law. There's more. Casey even got caught investing Pennsylvania pensions in a company backed by communist China that the Department of Defense called a national security threat. Tell shady Bob Casey, stop the corruption and put Pennsylvania first.
Hey, let's talk Pennsylvania, Nat. That's a negative ad against sitting Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey. The National Republican Senatorial Committee is going to need a lot of them if the rumors are true on who the GOP might be. This via The Hill. Republicans view Casey as vulnerable and are hoping to improve on candidate quality this time around with former Senate candidate Dave McCormick. We're going to get to him in a second. However, former failed conservative gubernatorial candidate Doug Mastriano is also eyeing another potential run, raising alarm bells in the GOP. With Casey in, the attention now shifts across the aisle to where Republicans hope to avoid a 2022 redux as Mastriano prepares a bid for that seat. One Pennsylvania-based GOP operative told The Hill that Mastriano is, quote, getting every single duck in a row ready for a potential run. Noting that he's been firing up his Facebook Live events that he frequently held during the 2022 campaign. Quote, he's doing everything in his power to consolidate his base and to make sure that they're staying with him in the event that he runs. So let's go ahead and take a look at what happened in Pennsylvania for the Republicans. Because by the way, it was grim. Republicans don't need to win Pennsylvania to win the presidency. But they desperately, desperately would like to. Pennsylvania, in many ways, is kind of the Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, I guess, Michigan, too. You can throw them into kind of the states that are not tipping points, but if Democrats don't win them, it is hard for them to win the presidency, if that makes sense. Pennsylvania specifically. It's close. It's kind of the new Florida. It's kind of the new Florida, Pennsylvania. But here's what happened in 2022. Doug Mastriano, who is somebody that I was actually more bullish on in the room, because I did think that the more he talked and got himself out to people beyond his bubble, the more it worked against efforts to paint him as extreme. Because he comes off more as kind of intense military history buff military man. I think I described him as somebody that probably knows multiple episodes of Dan Carlin's Hardcore History by heart. He comes off as more like that than he does a stark raving weirdo. The problem is his campaign was run like a stark raving weirdo, and he didn't do any press and he couldn't raise any money. And so he just sort of withered and died on the vine. Let's go back to election night during the midterms. Mastriano gets a whipping 41.7% to winner Josh Shapiro's 56.5%. It's a double-digit loss. I mean, bad, bad news. Meanwhile, Mehmet Oz, 46.3% to John Fetterman's 51.2%. So you underperformed Oz if you're Mastriano. That's not so good, Al. That's not so good. Which leaves us to McCormick. McCormick also lost to Oz, but he lost to Oz by less than 1,000 votes in that state's primary. They both beat a more MAGA challenger in Barnett. And McCormick was running against the tide. He didn't have Donald Trump's endorsement. And so I think that at the end of the day, he's a stronger candidate. Is he going to be somebody that will be able to carry the mail and run some of that Glenn Youngkin playbook? Would a Glenn Youngkin type win in Pennsylvania? Not the crazy, I'm just trying to be an elected representative for the first time, although McCormick doesn't have a gigantic record in politics. He has not been elected to office. But still, he's got some kind of governmental experience. He ran a pretty good campaign against Oz. He just didn't get the coin flip. He hired all the same Trump people that everybody else did when they were looking for endorsements, and he did not win. So would Mastriano get that endorsement? Would Trump stay away? I mean, almost assuredly not, because Trump doesn't stay away from anything. Let's swing down from Pennsylvania to West Virginia via NBC. Some of the most powerful forces in Republican politics are on course for an explosive and expensive collision in West Virginia's Senate primary. On one side, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and National Republican Senatorial Committee and Senate Leadership Fund, the McConnell-aligned super PAC, are pushing for Governor Jim Justice, a former Democrat who switched parties in 2017 to jump into the race. On the other hand, the big spending anti-tax group Club for Growth just announced its support for Representative Alex Mooney, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, who pledged to spend $10 million on this West Virginia primary. The jockeying by Washington power brokers signals the primary could be one of the most expensive in West Virginia history, as Republicans target Democratic Senator Joe Manchin in a key battleground state for control of the Senate. Club for Growth is known to spend freely in GOP nominating contests, while McConnell and allies, stunned by a crop of weak candidates in the midterms, have been proactive when it comes to 2024. Quote, former chair of the West Virginia GOP, Conrad Lucas, I certainly wished I owned a television station in the state of West Virginia for the 2024 cycle. Jim Justice has been a little bit more vocal about national issues lately, coming to the defense of Donald Trump. Gives you the sense that he's running. Of course, it's Manchin's seat that is up. What happened back in 2018, the last time he won? Well, Manchin beat his challenger, Morrissey, by a little over 3 percentage points. 46.3 to 49.6. That is, I believe, less than 20,000 votes in West Virginia. It ain't a lot. And let's remember that 2018 was a very good cycle for Democrats. So, if you're in a state as blood red as West Virginia is, it looks like Joe Manchin understands the writing on the wall. And so, to end our great reset, as we take a look at our landscape here, I want to point you to a group that you may or may not know the name of. But I suspect if this is the first time you are hearing their name, you are going to hear their name much, much more. I'm going to read you this story here from the Washington Post. Former Senator Joe Lieberman knows better than most the impact that third-party bids can have on presidential elections. His 2000 Democratic campaign for vice president fell just 537 Florida votes short of victory in a state where Ralph Nader, the liberal activist and Green Party nominee, won more than 97,000. But that didn't stop the Connecticut Democrat, turned independent, from joining a meeting Thursday in support of plans by the centrist group No Labels to get presidential ballot lines in all 50 states in 2024. The group calls its effort an insurance policy against the major parties nominating two unacceptable candidates next year. Asked if President Biden, Lieberman's former Senate colleague, would be unacceptable, the former senator said the answer was uncertain. Quote, no decision has been made on any of that, but we're putting ourselves in a position. You know, it might be that we will take our common sense, moderate, independent platform to him and the Republican candidates and see which of them is willing to commit to it. And that could lead to, in my opinion, a No Labels endorsement. But uncertainty over the $70 million No Labels ballot effort has set off major alarm bells in Democratic circles and raised concern among Republican strategists who've launched their own research projects to figure out the potential impacts. As Lieberman spoke, the Arizona Democratic Party filed a lawsuit to block No Labels from ballot access in the state on procedural grounds. Matt Bennett of the centrist Democratic think tank Third Way has argued that the plot is, quote, going to reelect Trump, end quote. And Adam Green of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee has accused No Labels of wanting to play the spoiler. Said Stuart Stevens, the former presidential campaign strategist for George W. Bush, John McCain, and Mitt Romney, who now works with the Lincoln Project. The only way you can justify this is if you really believe that it doesn't really matter if it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump. So it's sort of a test. If you live in a world where it doesn't matter, this is kind of harmless. If you live in a world where it does matter, it's dangerous. Folks, you're going to hear a lot about no labels going forward. In fact, when those fine folks who wrote Lucky and Shattered write their next book, I would not be shocked if No Labels plays a fairly strong part of it. It's going to be something talked a lot about on MSNBC, a lot on Fox News. Biden world will hate it. Trump or DeSantis, or let's throw her in, Nikki Haley as the nominee, will likely attack the group. But you want to know who's heard all of that before? Oh, that's his theme music. Joe Manchin. Here's Joe Manchin on Meet the Press a couple weeks ago, just openly musing about his future.
That sounds like something, somebody that's looking for a way into national politics.
Well, you know, every senator's on a national.
I understand spot. That, but you know where I'm going.
I know where you're going. And the bottom line is
you're not telling me no.
I'm telling you that I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that when I make my decision, I make it based on what's best, what I think I can do to support and best for my country and my state.
Do you want President Biden to seek re-election?
He has to make that decision. I think that's a personal decision.
And you haven't decided if he does, you're not ready to support him?
I haven't decided on anything I'm going to do until I see what the lay of the land is going to be at that time, because this country needs to unite. We need to come back together. We're not coming together. West Virginia,
Mountain Mama. Will the country road for No Labels go through West Virginia? Or is it just confused, like people who sing this song because it's about the west of the state of Virginia and not West Virginia? Only time will tell. And now, you've been reset. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky, misty taste of moonshine. Politics, Politics, Politics is written and hosted by me, Justin Robert Young, for Dog and Pony Show Audio in Austin, Texas. If you would like to send me an email, it is theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter. The show is at PX3Tweets, and I am at Justin R. Young. You can find me live on Twitch, PX3Live.com. You can share this podcast with your friends and family, PX30Podcast.com. If you'd like to support me, you can do so, paypal.me/payjury. My Venmo is justin-young-20. Cash App is PX3Cash, and you can send anything you'd like to me in the mail. P.O. Box 153184, Austin, Texas, 78715. Of course, you can only get our bonus content at TakePoliticsSeriously.com. $3 tier gets two bonus podcasts per week covering all the news that we miss on our free podcasting schedule. And our $10 tier gets your name read at the end of the show like these fine folks in the Titanic. $10 tier. Jason, Andres, Matt, John Gross, C. Garcia, El Basso, Matthew T., John, Craig Potts, MC Dradio, Unsafe DB Levels, Katie Amanda, Yield, Pinball Shop, DP4 Bongo, Niemeister, Catherine, Todd, and Vote Gloria Young for King of the New World Order. Edison, Up, Up, Down, Down, Left, Right, BA, Select, Start, Dr. G, Neil, Charles, Darren, 100 Mile Runner, Idris Arslanian, Bluefront, and the Lenina, DL, Steven, Chad, Nomadic Terran, Molly's Dashing Debut, Miranda Janelle, Adam, Chief Andy, Robert, Casey, Paul is awesome, Brad, Richard, Just Another Pilot, Middle-Aged Mike Who Loves Frank Got Abducted, Utah Jimmy Montana, The Gen, A-L-D-L-D-L-D, Really, Chopper, Andrew, and Joshua. If you'd like your name on that, well, only one place to go, TakePoliticsSeriously.com. No idea what's coming up on the next episode. I got a few lines in the water. We'll see who shows up. I guarantee it's going to be worth your time because I wouldn't waste it. Till next time, is your old pal Justin Robert Young saying. Some shows talk about politics, others talk about politics, and still more discuss politics. This is the only show that dares discuss all three.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.